is working. Okay, so we're studying Mishnah, of course. We're studying Baba Kama. We're at the end of chapter 8, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Last time we started Mishnah Vav, the sixth Mishnah. Yes. We might have superficially finished it, I'm not sure, but it's certainly worth going over again, because I have some more information to add, and then we'll go on to the last Mishnah, Mishnah Zion, and hopefully, if everything goes well, we'll finish the perek, finish the chapter. Okay? Good?
Yes.
Do you need from Amiram the sources, the questions?
I'll go get them.
Amiram.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so let's read this Mishnah. And again, we began reading it last time. Everyone have the place? Mishnah Vav, the sixth Mishnah. Hatokea lechaviro noten lo sela. We're not exactly sure what that word tokea means. A tokea lechaviro might mean that you punched your friend. It's certainly some damage, bodily damage you did to him. You punched him, perhaps.
Think that he blew the shofar in his ear?
It could also be that. That you either blew in his ear or something, or you hit his ear.
It says
one cuff. A cuff is a punch, I think. So anyway, tokeh la chaviru noten lo sela. So someone who does this bodily damage to his fellow has to give him a sela. Sela is a coin, and a sela is worth, you should know, 4 zuz.
Oh, that's not much.
Not much, right. You can buy
2 hadgavias.
Right. Okay. So, tokeh la chaviru noten lo sela. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Yossi Haglili mane. So Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, says mane. A mane means 100. It's 100 zuz. So you see the big difference between these two opinions. It's rather strange. It's rather hard to believe that we're understanding properly that there's a difference of 25 times more, says the second opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, should be given than what the first opinion says.
Are they from the same period?
It looks like they're approximately from the same period. So it's hard. Something strange is going on here. But that's not a hint. We're going to talk about it. There's nothing to say. Anyway, let's go on. Sitaro noten lo matayin zuz. Sitaro means satar oto. He slapped him. He slapped him. Noten lo matayin zuz. Has to give him 200 zuz.
No, two mane.
Exactly. It's two mane. It means that for some reason slapping is worse on some level, we'll have to see, than someone who is tokea la chaviro. It's much worse.
Rabbi, is sela related to amen sela?
Say it again?
Like in Tehillim, you say sela.
Yeah, amen sela?
No, it's not related. It's spelled differently.
Oh,
yeah, that's with a hey.
Hey, I thought so.
Now it says, lahar yado noten lo arba me'od zuz. Now, lahar yado, all it means is with the back of his hand. Obviously, it's a continuation of the previous phrase. It means sitaro, he slapped him, with the back of his hand. Noten lo arba me'od zuz gives him 400 zuz. For some reason, slapping with the back of your hand is worse than slapping with the front of your hand. How much worse is it? Oh, so you're assuming it's worse, that it hurts more, that it's... Right. Then it could also be what Lan just said, right? It could be that it's more degrading to slap someone with the back of your hand than to slap them with the front of your hand. Obviously, this will be something that has cultural context involved, if it is a matter of more or less disgrace. In any case, as far as the amount of money we're talking about, doing it with the back of your hand is doubly... In terms of the payment, is doubly worse, from 200 zuz to 400 zuz.
We have an ascending line.
Okay, now tsaram ba'ozno. Now tsaram ba'ozno
is
doing something to someone's ear. Now, if we early interpreted tokeh lechaviro is related to the ear, then this is somehow different. If the tokeh lechaviro was nothing to do with the ear, then we don't have to worry about how this is different than that. So Ram Biado might mean he pulled his ear, might be he slapped his ear. We're not going to talk here about those differences. So Ram Bozno,
don't get ideas,
comma, talash bisaro, that's clear, talash bisaro, he pulled his hair. Literally, he pulled it out. You know, he pulled so hard so someone's hair came out. Not all of it, but part of it. Rakach, I pronounced it wrong, rakach, vihigia bo ruko, He spit, and literally arrived to him his spit. In other words, you could spit at someone and the spit won't actually touch them, or you can spit and higia bo roko, and the spit actually fell upon them, which is obviously worse. Another case, after we have tsaram ba'ozno, that's the first case, talash b'saro, the second case, rakak v'higia bo roko, the third case, hivir talito mimeno, he pulled his clothing off him. Talito, the word is talit, right?
Mm-hmm. There's so is this like a little bit of clothing, any clothing, or all?
There's a discussion among the commentators. Some say it only refers to the beged elyon, the external beged, the external clothing. Others means that it means you expose the person's skin.
Oy.
It doesn't say here. In any case, it's another in this list of bad things you could do to someone. He pulled his clothing from him. Next possibility, para rosha isha b'shuk. He disheveled the head of a woman in the market. Means he exposed her hair in the market. All of these cases we just had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the payment is the same, noten arba me'ot zuz, 400 zuz.
So we have here a proof that women wore head cover.
Very true. This actually plays a role in discussions of women's head cover. I should say women's hair cover. We'll get back to that. Let's just read to the rest of the Mishnah. Zeh haklal, this is the rule. Hakol lefi kvodo, it's all according to his honor. So that seems to mean that the previous payments are a matter of kvod, a matter of honor, something to do with disgrace and honor, embarrassment. It's not exactly clear what the connection between the payments we just talked about is and the present klal, the present rule that says it's all according to his honor. We'll have to talk about that later. Now we're just going through the Mishnah.
It's very
quickly.
Open.
Let's go on. Amar Rabbi Akiva. That's the famous Rabbi Akiva we've all heard of. Afilu aniim shebi Yisrael. Even the poor that are among Israel, not poor Jews, even poor Jews. Ruin otam keilu hem b'nei chorin sheyardu minichseihem. Shehem b'nei Avraham Yitzchak b'Yaakov.
That's beautiful.
It is. Of course, Ilana understands longer for everyone else because she's a native Hebrew speaker. So what Rabbi Akiva said is, even the poor among the Jews, we see them as if they are b'nei chorin, which is a phrase we should remember from Pesach, b'nei chorin. Right? In Pesach we want to show ourselves as b'nei chorin, as free men. And here, free men means aristocrats. So says Rabbi Akiva, even the poor, we see them as if they are aristocrats, sheyardu minichseihem, literally that went down from their possessions. In other words, they used to be rich, now they're poor. So when you hurt someone who's poor, you damage someone who's poor, we think of them as people who are not intrinsically poor. It's not their essential social status. They're really very rich people, just temporarily they're poor. And we'll talk about the significance of that is when we go back over the material. Right, okay, very good. And why do we do this? I'm just finishing the sentence. Shehem b'nei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, because they are the children of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. What's the connection? We'll go back and talk about it later. Just continue on in the translation. We're still here. Okay. Umaasei be'echad shepara rosh ha'isha b'shuk. A story, an occurrence, that's the word maasei, be'echad, concerning one, a certain person, shepara rosh ha'isha b'shuk, that disheveled, that uncovered the head of a woman in the market. Bat lifnei Rabbi Akiva. The case came before Rabbi Akiva. It's in the feminine, meaning the woman came before Rabbi Akiva to ask for damage money, probably. V'chivo liten la arba me'ot zuz. And he obligated him to give her 400 zuz. He, meaning Rabbi Akiva, apparently, obligated the perpetrator of the crime to give the woman 400 zuz for what he did. And that, of course, is in accordance with what we read earlier, that if you uncover the hair of a woman in the shuk, you have to pay arba mot zuz, and Rabbi Akiva indeed said you have to pay arba mot zuz. Yeah.
And then why does it say he did it?
That's of course a good question, but we should first read on. Perhaps the answer will become clearer. Amar lo, he said to him, meaning that the man, the perpetrator, has just been fined, said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, ten li zman, give me time. In other words, I can't pay immediately, give me some time to get the money. V'natan lo zman, and he gave him time. Rabbi Akiva said, you can pay another, whatever it is, a week, a month, it doesn't say. Shimara omedet al petach hatzera. The word shimara means hu shamar otah. He watched for her. So the man who had to pay the fine is now stalking the woman.
Oh, right, I remember, yeah.
He's stalking the woman. He's hiding to see what she's going to do. So he watched her, omedet al petach hatzera. He saw her standing, I should say, he watched her standing at the entrance of her courtyard. Hatzera means hatzera shela, her courtyard.
Is that not already degrading that she's not inside? She's kind of a little bit out?
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
The hatzera is the place where women do their work. They do the washing, the cooking. Shavar etakad bifanea. He now broke a jug in front of her. He purposely did that. He broke a jug right where she is. Uvok isar shemen. And in it was like an isar of shemen. Isar is a very small amount. This jug had some oil in it, shemen, and he purposely spilled the oil on the ground right in front of her for the following reason. Let's read what happens. Giltat rosha. She uncovered her head. She took whatever was covering her hair off. She threw it away. Vaita mitapachat umanachat yada al rosha, and she was. This is hard to translate. And she was like patting and putting her hair, her hand on her head.
So she massaged the oil into.
She was taking her hand, picking up oil from the ground and putting it into her hair, because her hair is a good way of saving the oil. She has no jug to put it in. She's just putting in her hair so it will get absorbed there.
Oh, I thought it was she used it as a cosmetic.
I think she's trying to save the oil. Later she'll go home and she'll squeeze out her hair,
man,
into a jug.
Oh, fine. Cook that, with that? Yuck.
I don't want to be cooking at that lady's house.
Another one, we're talking people are really poor.
Yes.
Right? Just imagine this level of poverty.
Oil.
Right? And oil is worth something.
Oil is expensive.
So now,
would you do it with gasoline?
No.
So now, he midaleya edim, which means the man.
Yes.
This verb should be read as a past perfect, even though it's not written in the form. We understand from the context. It means he had stood over her witnesses. In other words, when he broke the jar with the oil in it, he purposely already called people to stand there and see what she's going to do. So I can have witnesses that she purposely exposed her head in the shuk, in the market.
Right.
Uva lifnei Rabbi Akiva. And he came before Rabbi Akiva, the man who now owes the money.
Just calling getting right a phone call.
Yeah, from Mora P.
Can
we'll let it go, right? We'll just let it go.
Just let it ring and don't worry about it.
Was going to hit.
There's no one that I am expecting a call from,
okay,
that I need to interrupt.
So anyway, so now the man who Rabbi Akiva had obligated to pay all this money comes before Rabbi Akiva and says, look, this woman, I shouldn't have to pay her because she's willing to expose herself in the shuk. I shouldn't have to pay for exposing her because she did it herself. She does it herself. Amarlo, Rabbi, lezo aninoten arbamo zuz. Rebbe, to this woman you make me pay 400 zuz. Amar lo, said Rebbe Akiva back to the man, lo amar teklum. You didn't say anything. In other words, your argument doesn't hold water with me. Even though she's willing to expose herself in the shuk, you still have to pay for exposing her in the shuk.
But she's not in the shuk, she's at the entrance to a house.
Ah, okay. But apparently, at the entrance, I guess, means that she could be seen from outside the entrance in the...
It's in the street.
The article says street instead of for shoot, so I guess it's just some public setting.
Now I can see myself, but I don't have to see Jeremy as long as he can see me.
No, hold on.
Okay, so we're good, we're going on. Now, Rabbi Akiva continues to speak. After he said, lo amarta klum, you didn't say anything, in other words, your argument doesn't hold water. Mm-hmm. In the legal context, he explains. And Rabbi Akiva apparently says the following. It's not clear if Rabbi Akiva said it actually then, or the Mishnah's bring it to explain what Rabbi Akiva is holding. Then listen to this, what the explanation is. Achuvel ba'atzmo, achal pi sheino rashai patur. Aharim shechavlu bo chayavin. Translation: he who hurts himself. In other words, I take a knife and I cut my hand on purpose.
We have
such things in our social context. Even though he's not rashai, he's not allowed. Patur. He doesn't have to pay. You don't have to pay yourself. You're not allowed to do it. But if you did it, you don't have to pay. Achirim shechavlu bo chayvim, but others who did the same damage to him, they have to pay. In other words, the fact that he would do it to himself doesn't change the law. But if others do it to him, they have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. We actually have it a lot. Sometimes when I teach, a student can, how could I forget it? But so when he does it, it's kind of acceptable. But if I did it to him,
no, but there he's not intentionally trying to hurt himself. But here, even if you have someone who intentionally hurts himself,
that's true.
That doesn't mean that you're allowed to do it to him. And if you do, you have to pay. Let's just read on a little bit. V'kutsetz et nitiotav, afal pi sheino rashai patur. Acherim shekatsetsu et nitiotav chayavim. A similar case, someone who cuts his saplings. So I have a nicely planted garden, and I go and mow it all down.
You saw me today moving weeds.
I do damage to my own garden. Alpha pishe no rashai patur. Even though you're not allowed to do that, not allowed to cut down your own trees.
No.
Why not? Say it again?
Your
I said you're not allowed though. Why not?
Well, maybe they're fruit trees.
No, yeah, it is.
Wait, is Jeremy saying something?
Maybe they're fruit trees.
Ah, fruit trees, Jeremy is right. Right, the verse in Sefer Dvarim says that you're not allowed to cut down fruit trees.
That's right.
What do you do if they are crowded?
And that's a whole different question, right? When you're allowed. Actually, I had a... Anyway.
You have to ask in that you have somebody come, then do it properly.
So you're not allowed, but if you do it, you're patur. You don't have to pay yourself for the damage you caused to your fruit trees. Achirim shekatsetsu et nitiotav chayavim, but others would do the same thing that you would do to yourself, they still have to pay. So this apparently is brought as a proof that even though this woman was willing to expose herself in the shuk, that doesn't mean you can do it to her and get away with it. That's the pshat of the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
Now ready to study the Mishnah. That was just an introduction, of course.
Didn't we have a guy that kitzetz bantiot from the Arba Asher?
Very good. So this kitzetz bantiot literally means he cut down the sapling, but it's also a phrase that refers to what?
Becoming a heretic, I think.
Yeah, right. Indeed. It's a phrase that refers to becoming a heretic. And who's it spoken concerning?
Ben Zoma?
Ben Azaria.
Ben Azaria?
No. You're both wrong.
Oh, wait. No.
Albanish Nasura Paldi.
Well, Acher is what they call
him. Acher. Who is?
Elisha Ben Abuya.
Elisha Ben Abuya.
Elisha Ben Abuya.
Very good, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
He got a delay, so he was first.
Okay. So now let's go back to the Mishnah. With all the questions I have here, goodness gracious, 21 questions on this poor Mishnah. The first question says the following. In light of the first Mishnah in this chapter, what is a bit incongruous or superfluous about this Mishnah? So probably you'll say to yourself, I don't remember what the first Mishnah says. You only does remember? So let's go back and just remember the first Mishnah of this chapter begins in the following fashion. Achovel b'chavero, he who does bodily damage to his fellow, chayav alav mishum chamisha dvarim, has to pay five different categories of damage. Bin nezik b'tsar b'ripui b'shevet u'vavoshet. He has to pay for the damage, he has to pay for the pain, has to pay for the doctor bills, has to pay for the unemployment, and has to pay for the disgrace, for the shame, for the humiliation.
Right.
Okay, so given all that, why do I say that the beginning of today's Mishnah is a bit incongruous or superfluous?
I would give two reasons. Can I give
two reasons? Both of them. Okay.
All right. One reason is that the system in the first Mishnah is relative. You go and there's a system for figuring out the price or the knas. Here they're giving you actual just prices.
Right.
This is a menu, like, and this is
Dinar. The first Mishnah says that every case you see how much nezik was caused, how much damage, how much pain was caused, how many years of work he lost, how much was the doctor lost, how much disgrace did actually cause him. In each case we go and you figure out in an individual case-by-case basis how much you have to pay. Whereas our Mishnah comes and says, if you punch them in the face, you have to pay X. What do you mean? How could that be? It contradicts the first Mishnah. It really does contradict.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to have a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to have a problem. What happened?
Every time someone calls, it hangs up on them, so I'm going to call them back.
So
the other reason I was going to say was that...
it's all dignity. It says that this one is about dignity. Where? So is that...
So that's an important point. But even if that's true, right.
But here it says everyone is B'nai Horin.
Okay, so slow down, but you're good.
I'm sorry.
So even if we were to say that our Mishnah is not talking about all five categories of damage, but only about one particular one, let's say disgrace, kavod. But still, the first Mishnah also talked about that.
Right.
That each one is according to the Mivayesh and Mitvayesh. It's according to he who did the disgrace and he who got the disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't understand why our Mishnah takes something that's supposed to be relative to the case and makes it absolute.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd like to do now is try and answer our own question. And
so
this is question two. Wait a second. How might we nevertheless understand the place or the role and necessity of this Mishnah?
We can't live in a legal system in which everything is so open that we need to deal with each case and evaluate.
That's a good point.
It just doesn't work. So we need to kind of have a menu how much everything costs, and that's it. And also we have the principle of Akiva that since we are all kind of royalty descended, then we all... are equal about our grief, and therefore the price should be even. It's more democratization of the system.
Okay, so let's take your two points.
Mm-hmm.
If we take Ilana's first point, and we say, we can't have every case being examined on its own merits, it'll take too much time as far as the Dayan goes, it'll take too much time in court, we have to have a menu. Okay, that makes sense, except for the fact that if that's true, why do we need Mishnah 1 at all? We should just have a full menu of all the different 100 types of damage that can happen, each one with its amount. But we have both. We have the Mishnah 1 that says it's all according to the particular case, Mishnah 6 that gives us a menu. So we'll have to take what Ilana said, we'll have to add something else.
Yeah, Mishnah 6 doesn't really talk about damage. It talks about shame.
But again, even if it only talks about shame, we'll talk about another 5 minutes. Even if that's true, it doesn't help us at all.
Well, yeah, because since there's no damage, and people didn't lose a job, and all the other categories...
Fine, but Mishnah 1 still said, a kol lefiyah mikvayesh v'amivayesh.
So I think we have two fields of thought. One is the Akiva democratization.
Okay, so says Ilan, there might be a machloket. Might be a disagreement here between the two Mishnayot. I think there's an easier thing we could say. That might be. But we could simply say that these cases in Mishnah Vav are very, very common cases. The principles of Mishnah Aleph hold true. That in most cases, the Beit Din has to do a... check out each case, what happened, and how much damage was caused, and all the five different levels. But there are certain common things, like slapping people, like pulling hair, like uncovering a woman's head in the shuk. Those things are so common that already the rabbis have set a certain menu.
Must have been a delightful society.
Such things happen today also.
Women's hair.
I think people want to do that today, but
that's good.
And, of course, we'll still have to ask later the question, is our Mishnah only talking about boshet, disgrace, or is it also talking about other things? We'll get to that, but that's independent of the we talked about right now. Okay. And of course, question three now is what we just talked about. What would appear to be the common denominator of all of the acts of aggression cited in this Mishnah? And we've basically answered that already. They shame. All have an element of shame, of boshit, of disgrace. And secondly, as Ilana just pointed out, there's something that they all don't have.
They don't damage, really.
There's no permanent damage here.
The only damage is emotional.
Right?
Well, there's pain.
Yeah. Okay, that's very good. So of the five different types of damage we talked about, damage, pain, doctor bills, unemployment, and disgrace, it looks like these have one or two, but not the other three or four. These have boshet, these have disgrace, and they might also have tsar, pain, but they don't have a loss of permanent value.
No shevet.
And they don't have any doctor bills, probably. And they don't have any shevet. They don't have any loss of time from work.
Right.
It looks like, in most cases.
Yeah, because if a person allows someone to insult them, or if a powerful person insults a weak person, it creates an impression among other people. It might result in a loss of income.
That's a very good point.
You know?
That's very good. So then all we can say is that in most cases, or in many cases, these different categories here are mostly limited to shame and to pain, but there might be cases in which there's other things involved. And we'll see that in the commentators very later. But there is certainly a common denominator between all these seven or eight categories of damage here. Now, question four. In addition to the answer to the previous question, which is that all these have primarily shame and perhaps also sar, pain, but usually not other categories of damage. In addition to the answer to the previous question, what one phrase in this Mishnah reveals which one of the Hamishad Dvarim, the five payments discussed in Mishnah 1 of the chapter, is the focus of this Mishnah? Complicated question there. But the answer is very simple.
Well,
I guess. Right? Uh-huh. The answer is that we have in this Mishnah phrases all according to his kavod, to his honor, which somehow, again, the context is not clear, we'll come back to it, is it called talking about boshet, talking about disgrace. So clearly, the Mishnah is focused on disgrace. It might also be talking about pain, and in rare cases, there might also be other damages involved, but the main focus is the boshet, the disgrace. And then comes the big question that has no answer, no clear answer. Question five. Do you think that this Mishnah is discussing only the payment referred to in the previous question or to others as well? Now let me explain what that would mean. When it says here that you have to pay 400 zuz when you uncover the head of a woman in the shuk, well, you might say that means that's all you have to pay. You caused the woman tremendous boshet, tremendous disgrace. You may have caused her pain by pulling on her hair when you exposed it. It could be that you also caused actually other types of damage, like Mary Beth said. But you only have to pay 400 dues. That's for everything. It's not more than that. Or you might say, no, this means it's 400 zuz only for the boshet. If it's one of those rare cases in which you also caused her other damage, for example, now that people saw her without her head covered, they won't employ her, you also have to pay shevet, that rare case which you have to pay unemployment, that's in addition to the 400 zuz. In other words, we just gave two different ways of looking at this. It might be that 400 zuz is a maximum. You don't have to pay more than that. Even if you did cause nezik or shevet or ripui, or the other types of damage. Or it might be that you do have to pay extra in the rare cases in which something more than disgrace and pain were caused. That's going to turn out to be a machlok, an argument between the Rambam and the Rosh. And we'll get to that in another few minutes. So let's go on now. Why do you think, this is an easy question, I shouldn't even have asked it, but it's obvious. Why do you think there's a liability only if he giavo roko, and not if the spittle did not actually reach him?
It's more shame.
Yeah, simple, right? If someone spit at you, and the spit fell on the ground, it could be the shame.
They didn't really mean it so much. They weren't really trying.
No, they just missed.
Wait, so Mary Beth is right. It could be that it's not clear then if they really meant to disgrace you.
Maybe they were just clearing the throat.
And it could be that in such a case, the person who did it has to pay disgrace, but not this amount. Perhaps much less.
Right.
But there's also something else we should say. It could be that since there was absolutely, positively no contact, therefore, there's no payment at all. At all the other cases, I actually touched the person.
Uh-huh.
In the case of spitting, if my spit touched them, at least something of mine touched them. Uh-huh. If nothing of mine touched them, then perhaps, we're being told that there's no damage to be paid at all. There's no money to be paid at all.
It's so like cursing.
Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry that I'm interrupting because Ilana just said something interesting.
What?
She just said what I was going to say.
It's like cursing.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if you say something to someone? What if you call them a stupid?
Yeah.
Right. In other words, if we take the position that if the spit didn't reach the person, you don't have to pay anything at all, then we'll ask the question, does that teach us that for cursing you don't have to pay anything?
But we have, if you curse God...
Blasphemy, right? That's
yes.
From our session.
At least according to Rashi, Hatzokea la Palawa means shouting in his ear. So.
Oh, that's a good point.
You're not cursing him.
Right.
According to this.
Oh, that's
unless it means he actually hit him in the ear.
That's a very good point.
So that maybe cursing would be counted as shouting.
Ooh, I like that.
I didn't see. Yeah.
That hurt him. Let me see.
So it could be like, could be a decibel thing, or it could be just a cotton.
Oh, like my grandson
okay,
shouting.
Right, that's a good point. If tokela chaviro is a matter of shouting in his ear, which is no physical contact directly, that would prove that you don't need physical contact in order to be liable to pay. Yeah, good point. Good point. I didn't think of that.
I'm here. I'm always comes up with creative ideas.
I thought nowadays. Today, if you, let's say you curse somebody out because they made a wrong turn, or you know, in their car, or maybe at the store, they butted in line, you know, and you got mad and said something, tired, they can sue you.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good liability.
They can take you as a misdemeanor. You have to be real careful what you say.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So now the next question gets the things we just talked about. Why might the answer to the previous question, I'm sorry, what might the answer to the previous question teach about payment in the case of oral insult? And we just discussed that, right?
Yeah.
Question 8. What lack of specificity concerning the case of Para Rosh Aisha Bashuk uncovered the head of the woman in the market is surprising and perhaps instructive as to the custom or law at the time of the Mishnah. Let's think about that.
Anything about what kind of woman it is.
Right. And what do you mean by kind of woman?
Well, is it a servant? Is it a wife? Is it a married woman and an unmarried woman?
Right. Right.
Which means that most women, that all women were head covered.
Perhaps, let's think about that. So what does the Mishnah say? It says that you went and you uncovered the head of a woman in the shuk. And it doesn't say married, doesn't say unmarried. We could deduce from that.
If she's she's not married, it's Nara, no?
No.
Nikala Nara,
Nara refers to age, doesn't
it
refer to status.
They respected all women. I mean, you can't mess with women.
Yeah, that's certainly true. The men here know that from experience, I'm sure, in different fashions, but that's all different. Can of kosher worms.
Very bad news it here.
But just think of now what we read. He uncovered the head of a woman in the shuk.
Oh, what about in her home?
Okay, so first of all, it's only talking the shuk. We have to talk about that.
But what about like in front of her house or in the public area, other than this?
Well, here he is in front of her
right.
house.
Right. So Yekiva, the case was at the entrance of the courtyard, but not in the courtyard. In the courtyard, it might be okay for the woman to be uncovered. We're talking about at the entrance of the courtyard, which is the shuk. The shuk doesn't mean literally Machane Yehuda. It doesn't mean the shuk. It means the Rishut the Rabbim, right, where people are. But I just want to get back to the previous question. It might be from here you can deduce that all women covered their hair. Or it might be that everyone knows that only married women covered their hair, and therefore it doesn't have to say the married woman, because it would only be a married woman that had her hair covered. Mm-hmm. Which means you can't deduce anything from here. If the custom in those days was for women to always have their hair covered, even if they're unmarried, or if it was only married, well, you can't deduce from here. And the truth is that there are discussions of that in the halakh literature. We really don't know. But I will add that the Mishnaic sources...
Men's kippah is
wait a second. That the Mishnaic sources that talk about the obligation of hair covering for women, they also don't specify married women. It's just not clear. I'll give you an example. There's a Mishnah that says that a man can divorce his wife if she goes outside with uncovered hair. Just like he can divorce his wife if she talks to too many men in public. But that also doesn't prove anything concerning the question we're discussing.
Right.
It could be she did something that no woman should do. Or it could be she did something that only a married woman should. It's just not clear from the context. It's not clear from the context. So we still don't know from there. Now I'll just point out, if this question is discussed in halakhic sources to the very day, there are a small minority of halakhic sources that say that unmarried women should cover their hair. But that's certainly not the halakha, and it's not the majority. I can point out, though, that in very Haredi circles, in Mea Sharim, the unmarried girls never walk around with free hair. It's always either covered or braided.
That's true.
Right? And it's related to the same idea, that hair that is flowing is in some sense immodest. You might not have to cover it, but it has to be braided. And that goes back to the same things we're discussing. Now, don't walk out of here and say that I said that unmarried women should cover their hair. I didn't say that, right? But
is there any halakhic sources that say that a married woman doesn't have to wear hair covering?
So concerning that question of hair covering in the modern era, there's a lot of things that have been written. There was a major article of over 80 pages in English written by Rabbi Michael Broy, one of the foremost halakhic authorities in America in the modern Orthodox circles. And the subject was limud zkut. I'll say what that means in a second. Limud zkut for those married women our generation who don't cover their hair. What that means is he was explaining why it could be that there is a halakhic foundation for women not to cover their hair. He says that even this halakhic foundation, it's not the halakha, it's not the law. Women should cover their hair, his conclusion is. But it could be there's a basis for those women who don't. It's a very, very long, scholarly, deep,
and controversial
article that he wrote.
Can I just ask?
Before I finish, there's an uncontrovertible fact.
Yes.
Which is that in America, we're in America now, right? We're in America now.
We are, yeah.
That during most of the 20th century, until the 1960s, women in ultra-Orthodox Haredi circles didn't cover their hair. Married women. That's a fact.
Really?
How do we know? We have pictures. We have pictures of Rashi Yeshiva and their wives in public and dances and dinners in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, before there were wigs, with uncovered hair. And when these pictures circulate, people ask, how could that be? So Rav Roy wrote this article trying to explain how could that be. But it's an incontrovertible fact that was the way people behaved
in
the 40s, 50s, and 60s. In Europe, we have the testimony of the Aruch HaShulchan, written in the 1910s in Belarus, he says that many women in our era don't cover their hair, married women. Mm-hmm. He just says that's a fact. So apparently, in Jewish circles, in Ashkenazi circles, there were many, many women from upright, halachic, Haredi families for perhaps 100 years that didn't cover their hair. How do you explain that, and how could that be, and what's the halachic basis? That's the subject of Rabbi Broid's article.
That's amazing.
The article was very controversial. There were those who wrote against it and those who were for it. Rabbi Broid responded. And anyway.
It's storming with people.
No, this hair thing is huge. I mean, hair is very important. But what is some big problem with hair?
Okay, so that's a whole different story, but let me just say that it is a little bit of a tempest in a teapot. I mean, there may be more important things in Judaism, like giving tzedakah to the poor, and
right,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not to say that it's not an important matter. That has to be discussed. Of course, modesty is important. Relations between the sexes is important. But there's certainly a proportionality here that might strike some people as disproportionate.
Right.
Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Amir was about to say something.
It's interesting, the woman's hair is described as flowing.
She's not married.
So that's, is this, so she's not married, but she's, her hair, the impression is at least that it's flowing, wasn't braided. And it's like the goat's going down somewhere, I don't remember where.
Good point. Gilad, I think.
Yes, so.
Okay,
it's all allegorical, it's not, she wasn't. Didn't live in Mesh.
I don't know. I must admit, I never thought of what you're saying.
I'm just trying to think of examples of hair that I can think of.
So it would seem that in the time of Shir Shirim, the hair of unmarried women, at least of shepherds in the field, was unbraided and uncovered.
And that was
okay. And in Shoftim?
Okay.
In Shoftim we have restriction on male hair, Shimshon.
Restriction? He's a Nazir.
Yes, that Nazir is somehow connected also with not cutting. It's kind of the opposite.
But that's not just for him, that's for any
Nazir. Okay, let's go on back to the Mishnah.
Alright, sorry, your turn.
Okay. So, here we go. Back to the Mishnah. We're in question 9. What is the meaning here of the word shok? Shok, and why does the law apply only? Shok, that's just public, right? Many people don't know this, but even according to the halachic opinion, which are the majority, that married women should cover their hair, it doesn't apply at home. Now, there is what's called the midat hasidut, going beyond the letter of the law, that women cover their hair even at home. For example, I think that there's a story in the Gemara that says a certain woman says that she never uncovered her hair even at home. As a midat chasidut, it's a great thing, but most women don't do that. And by the way, when it says that the letter of the law is that a woman doesn't have to cover her hair at home, according to any opinion, it means even if other people are at home, not just her
really?
Husband.
Really?
Within the walls of her home, it's not the shuk. I don't think that's the majority interpretation, but I certainly saw that in
even
inside
in home.
In Rav Hagen's book.
Oh wait,
right?
Jeremy, say something. Jeremy, speak up.
No, I read that in Rav Hagen's book. What you just said.
Uh-huh.
Understanding tzniut. He writes some very interesting things there, and one of those things is what you just said, that a woman within, that there are, he cites two opinions that are the minority opinion, that even if there are men present within the confines of her own home, she does not have to cover her hair.
Thank you for that. Rav Henkin was one of my teachers, yes. He's a famous Poseikin, a famous halakha decider in Yerushalayim, and I did not know what Jeremy just said.
What's his name, Henkin?
Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin. Okay, so let's go on now. We're in question 10. And this gets to something Ilana hinted at a few minutes ago. What potential parallel to the case of Para Rushi Shabashuk is missing, and what might we learn from the fact that it is missing?
Men?
Yeah.
Well.
What about men's hair? It does say something about pulling people's hair.
Yes, it does.
It does say something about pulling off his garment.
But it might mean right. that men were not wearing hats.
Very good. Indeed, the fact is, this is a sociological and halakhic fact, that men in the time of the Mishnah weren't, it wasn't considered a halakhic obligation to have their heads covered with a kippah or a hat or anything like that. It was considered in those days to be a midat hasidut, something unique. For those on a higher level, and according to some opinions, it was only for married men.
Wow.
Now again, you have to distinguish between women's hair covering and men's head covering. It's two different things. This is head, that's hair. Mm-hmm. But there's this parallel that there's opinions in the Gemara that it's only married men that cover their head, just like we have this approach that it's only married women to cover their hair. Again, don't get confused. It's two different realms. One is a matter of modesty between the sexes. The other is a matter of modesty in the presence of God, the kippah. But in any case, certainly in our day, it would be very, very embarrassing for some men to have someone take their kippah from them and be left bareheaded in the shuk. But the Mishnah doesn't say you have to pay for that arba mezuzos, foreign mezuzos, because in those days there was no such thing. In those days, most men apparently went around without their heads being covered in any fashion.
I was told by a friend of mine who used to live in Egypt that one way in which they were treated by the local population is that they would take their kippahs and throw them off.
I see. That's interesting.
What would they do?
They would be disgraced by the local Arabs. But
yes. That was
Egypt.
A way of kind of small torment. Mm.
Okay. Let's go on.
Shaming them, basically.
Yeah, right. 11. This is something that I think Lon answered a few minutes ago. The phrase, Hakol lefi kvodo, it's all according to his honor, is parallel to what phrase in Mishnah 1 of the chapter?
Hakol lefi amtayesh amitayesh.
She is right.
Yeah.
It's all according to the
shamer and shamed.
Right, and in this is we're talking about the shamed. I like to call it
shame-y.
Shame-y.
Which, just to go on the record, there's no such word, but we can create it. Question 12. What internal contradiction does there seem to be within this Mishnah?
Well, that's obvious, Rabbi Akiva. Saying,
and that contradicts what?
A choleric photo.
Yes, that's true what Lan said, right? He said, it's
yes
all according
no.
to his honor. Then Rabbi Kiva says, no, it's not according to his honor. They're all on the same level of honor.
Except if you read it differently. If you read Hakolefik Vodo, is the amount of money that you need to pay. That if he just tokea lechavero, it's one sela, if you slap him, it's the governing principle of the times.
And why?
Not lefik vodo shel adam, and lefik vodo of the
avera.
Of the avera.
Ah. Oh. Hakol lefik vodo kafir lana is explaining why we have the differences
yes.
between
it's the governing
this
principle.
Thing and that thing
yeah.
and other thing.
Would that apply for the deed?
Yes. Yes, the shame.
Nonetheless, it does.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it does contradict the Kol Lefi Amebayesh when
you're
there's
right.
a contradiction.
Unless.
Okay, Jeremy is speaking.
Unless Ben Horin is a minimum, and then from there you have higher levels beyond Ben Horin.
Very good.
Even
very
a
good.
Person who belongs to somebody else, like a slave, should be considered at least Ben Horin. And then from there, you have like the mayor of the town, the king of the country, and so on.
I hear. Now, usually, Ben Horin in this context means an aristocrat. It doesn't just mean a free person. But still,
okay.
What you said can hold water in a slightly different context. Let's wait a second and go back to it. What I want to say is the following. Where were we? We were right. The internal contradiction. First, we said, I want to point out a contradiction before the contradiction that Lan pointed out. We gave all these amounts of money. Then we said a kol l'kipodo. If a kol l'kipodo, a kol l'kipodo doesn't mean what Elana said it means, but it means it's all according to the individuals, what their level of honor in the society is, and that contradicts what we just said, that we have the same amount of money. In a certain sense, the internal contradiction in this Mishnah is the same contradiction between this Mishnah and Mishnah 1. That Mishnah 1 said, "Akol lefi ha mivayesh ba mitbayesh," it's all according to the disgrace done. And this Mishnah says something similar, "Akol lefi kvodo," it's all according to his honor. But this Mishnah also says, you got to have a standard amount, a standard menu. So that would seem to be a contradiction. Unless we, of course, say what Elana said, "Akol lefi do" means something else. So then we have to go on to question 13 and think how we can solve all these problems we have. Question 13. In what two or even three different ways might we solve the internal contradiction?
Boy, it reminds me of your yeshiva teacher, that every time you solved one thing, he showed you another way.
Yes.
Well, he gave one example.
Right, what Jeremy said is a perfect answer to the question.
I would think that Rabbi Akiva is only talking about poor people, but he doesn't mention slaves and other... Well,
uh-huh.
So, actually, the Fichvodo still applies. Poor people, don't put them at the level of slaves. Put them at the
but
level
we already saw in the previous Mishnayot discussion of slaves, and some had said slaves don't have any disgrace money at all.
Right.
I'm talking about poor people who are not slaves.
So that's Mishnah.
Right. But, and they are considered B'nai Horim, but slaves, they're still not considered.
No, but I'm saying, don't talk about slaves that's been discussed already in the previous Mishnayot.
Right. That's right. I see what you're saying. I understand that. Thank you.
But we could...
Slaves don't have Moshe at all. Okay.
So let's see what we can say here. Let's take Jeremy's principle and apply it in two different ways. Perhaps we want to say that the money is discussed until now, whether it's 100 or 200 or 400, they are the minimum. The minimum. But a kolafido, a kolafikfodo.
So it's like Orwell's book.
Meaning
everybody is equal and some are equal more.
Right. But it could be you have to pay more if the person if the person is at a very hard level. Or it could be all these are maximums. And a kolafido a kolafikfodo means that if the person has less dignity, you have to pay less.
Mm-hmm. But that breaks such a good principle.
Right. Exactly. I think Elan is right. Although, theoretically, we could take Jeremy's principle and apply it in this fashion, it really takes away from what seems to be the main thrust of the Mishnah, which is set a standard menu for these very common cases.
So like a minimum sentence.
I think my solution was better.
A minimum sentence. Like for a particular crime.
I don't like the minimum or the maximum.
No.
I mean, personally, I mean, I can't say that I'm right.
I think my principle was better, that you go according to the honor of that was taken away by the crime.
But...
Wait a second, I'm not following.
Her previous explanation.
Yeah.
L'fichvodo shel ha'averah.
I see. But I'm not sure that fits with the words.
You're right.
So let's think of another solution. I had something in mind that I'm trying to remember. Okay, let's see here. Kol lefi kvodo zehaklal. The truth is, I don't remember.
That part, kol lefi kvodo, is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? When it's Tanakama?
No, it's Tanakama in the Mishnah. I have a mental block.
Rabbi Meir.
Thank you.
Oh.
All right. Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir.
So was Rabbi Akiva often in contention with Rabbi Meir?
I can't say often, but I can say that it's nothing rare.
Can I ask a question? Why is that statement in the Mishnah? Is that like a change? Do we need a paragraph start there?
That's a very good point. This whole matter here Ze haklal hakol lefi kvodo is very difficult.
Yeah.
Because when you say ze haklal, this is the principle. In 9 cases out of 10, it comes to summarize what's already been said.
Mm-hmm.
But here it seems to be introducing an opposing opinion.
That's why I wanted it to be for the previous.
I see. Very good point that Ilan just made.
So in other words, spitting on somebody is more insulting than, you know...
Right.
According to Ilan's reading of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a problem here in the Mishnah that's not 100% clear wherever you cut it. Okay, so anyway, going on to Rabbi Akiva, let's look here. Question 14 was explain Rabbi Akiva's statement about the aniim, and we said he's just saying that the aniim, we shouldn't look at people as aniim as far as their essence. They're really aristocrats, and it's just a temporary setback.
I love it so much.
Can you relate, this is question 15, Rabbi Akiva's statement about the aniim to one or two statements in the Pesach Haggadah? I ask that because we just have the Pesach here.
Yeah. You mean the words or the just, b'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot atzmo kivul mi'asa mitzrayim?
Yes, but what do you mean by that?
Because we are all equally nechorin, but also former slaves.
It's very funny. I had something else in mind for the same phrase.
Oh, but what did you want from that?
I had the following in mind.
You didn't say Shinahava Vinehorim?
No.
I
had the following in mind. It says here, why do we consider them to be aristocrats who've lost their status? Shehem b'nei Avram Yitzhak v'Yaakov, because they are daughters, sons of Avram Yitzhak and Yaakov. Now, it looks like Rabbi Akiva is taking that literally in the following sense. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were rich. They were aristocrats.
And
all Jews are literally the sons and daughters of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, so that means they inherit a lot of money. And they're aristocrats. They just happen to lose it temporarily. So Rabbi Akiva is taking that statement, we should see ourselves as if we're really part of one family. As if we went out of Egypt. In other words, we're really the sons and daughters of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. That's what I meant in the Pesach Haggadah. I also meant something else. The same idea comes up someplace else in the Haggadah. I don't have Haggadah in front of me, but I'll tell you.
I can bring it.
It says that Avraham, in chapter 15 of Genesis, had God appear to him. And God said to him that your children will be slaves in a land that's not theirs, but they'll be redeemed. And it's clear, and then after that, the Haggadah says, "V'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chalotim." Each generation, they come against us, destroy us. It's a bit complicated, but clearly the Mishnah is saying that what God said to Abraham, that your children be slaves and then they'll be freed, that is meant to be a paradigm for many generations, not just for Abraham's generation. We will be slaves, we will be oppressed, we will be, they'll come to try and get us, and each generation we will be redeemed. So again, there are the ideas that what is said concerning Abraham really applies to all of us, because we're all part of one family, we're all part of one collective, one identity. Just like in each generation, one should see himself as he went out of Egypt. It's all part of one identity. And that's what Rabbi Akiva is basing himself on, that we're literally part of the family of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, because we're all born as aristocrats. Jeremy, what's going on there?
He's mixing a drink, I think.
The baby's making a little bit of noise.
I knew he'd blame his baby. Okay.
Sorry.
No problem.
See, when I speak, you say speak up, but then when the baby makes noise, then it's, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So how about to say
you're Ben Korin,
Ishmael and Esau were also descendants of
Abraham.
Yeah.
Abraham, for sure.
It's like, so are they aristocrats?
Well, it says the Yaakov.
But we have to see the dignity in them too.
It's all true. I was just going to say that
I'm going to remind them.
From my very, very poor memory, I remember looking at some of the verses in Sefer Bereishit, and it's not always clear. Right, Yishmael has the commandment of circumcision, right?
Right.
But another thing we see is not part of the brief. How does this work? It's not clear. We have to go into the verses, but there's a lot to talk about here. By the way, it just reminds me of that play that I talked about last year about burying our father, the biblical debacle. Did I tell you that story?
Which one? What?
Okay, it's a long, 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 long story, and I'm not going to tell a little story now, but to make a long, 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 long story short, there's a playwright who teaches at the university in Richardson, who wrote a play called Burying Our Father, a Biblical Debacle. The play was performed here in Dallas at the Undermain Theater last mm-hmm. year, an avant-garde theater, that is about the following. It's about the death of Abraham, and then Yishmael and Yitzhak come, this is on stage, to bury their father. And they have not seen each other for decades, the two sons. When they come to bury their father, they start talking, and they reminisce about their childhood. It turns out they have different memories of what went on in their childhood. Mm-hmm. Yishmael remembers what's written in the Quran about their childhood, mm-hmm. and Yitzhak remembers what's written in the Torah. And in this play, they become very angry. They start trying to kill each other. If you disagree, then they make up. Then they start to bury their father. Then God intervenes. It's a comedy, but it's really, really, really deep. And it's really, really very thought-provoking and challenging. Very wonderful play. And to make a long story short again, I am now in the process of working with the playwright to rewrite the play to use for interfaith dialogue. We got a big grant from...
Great.
And it's a big story. Long story.
What is the name of the playwright?
The play is Fred Korchak. He's actually Jewish.
Like Janusz Korczak.
Yeah. Perhaps it's the same family, who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's go back to our story.
Janusz Korczak never married.
Okay. Okay, so now, there's here question 17. Where do Rabbi Kiva's words end?
So the Yaakov.
No, I meant his words, I'm sorry, at the end of the Mishnah, when he talks to the man.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Yeah, all right, there we go.
So the question is, does he say a chovel and on, or does he say lo amata klum?
Here we go again.
Yeah, that's true. So the words chovel v'atzmo, etc., Rabbi Akiva's proof. Is Rabbi Akiva saying that? It could be saying that, or is it the Mishnah bring it later to prove Rabbi Akiva's point?
It's clear.
It could be that he's actually saying that in court.
Uh-huh. What difference does it make?
It doesn't make a big difference, I guess.
I mean, if you give a lot of credit to Rabbi Akiva, you might think if he said all this, it's more valid.
No, I'm not saying anything like that. I just think about what did he say? Just a point of fact. I'm not taking any place. Question 18.
I was wondering about it too.
What is the chidush of the ruling here that acherim shechavlu bo hayavim, others that damaged him have to pay? Isn't that obvious? It's written in the first Mishnah that you do damage to someone, you have to pay.
The chidush is...
And the answer is simple, by the way. I'm not fooling you here. What's the answer?
The chidush is simply that even if you damage yourself...
Right. That's the answer. Right. That others have to pay if they hurt you, even if you hurt yourself yesterday on purpose.
Way.
It doesn't change the situation that others are not allowed to do damage to you and they have to pay if they do. That's all.
We have kids that cut themselves.
Yeah. Now look at this question, question 19. What would appear to be problematic with the proofs that Rabbi Akiva offers at the end of the Mishnah? Do they really prove his point?
Yes.
Okay, how do they prove his point?
Well, they don't really address the question. The man was saying, this is a kind of woman that I don't have to respect.
Mm-hmm.
And he did
didn't say she hurts herself or doesn't hurt herself.
Right, right. You can say that the proof doesn't prove anything. The fact that I am willing to cut myself, what does that have to do with you cutting me? I'm willing to cut myself, okay. But it could be that I'm willing to cut myself, but I don't want you to cut me. But disgrace is different. If I'm willing to uncover my hair in the shuk, then that means that I'm not embarrassed by my hair uncovered in the shuk. So then if you come and uncover my hair in the shuk, then it could be that you shouldn't have to pay, because the state of disgrace you caused me doesn't embarrass me.
Yes, it does. The very let us say that that you are kind of small about your dignity and take off your head cover in order to save some pennies, and you need the penny. But the very movement of somebody removing your hair cover is a humiliating movement.
So I guess that the line is telling us Rabbi Akiva's thought process. But I can also see the opposite thought process, that the proofs really don't prove. I can see both sides of it.
Yes.
I can see both sides of it. And clearly, there is a machloket here between the men and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, like Ilan is saying, and I guess the men are saying like I said. Right? The man is saying, look, if she's willing to disgrace herself, that means that her hair being uncovered doesn't move her, doesn't hurt her.
Okay, let me prove it.
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying.
But let me try and prove it. Okay. In my synagogue, some men remove their hair, the kippah, when they leave synagogue. Mm-hmm. But if somebody found them in the street and removed their kippah, they would feel differently.
I get it. Okay, it's a good point. You've shown us what Rabbi Akiva is trying to say.
Yes.
Okay, let's see.
It's kind of an invasion of your space.
Last question to be asked, and I look at the question, I don't remember what I meant by it, so let's think together. Looking at the law of a chovel v'atzmo on its own.
Number is that?
20. Someone who does bodily damage to themselves, and taking it out of the context of the Mishnah, just the law itself, what do you think its deeper message might be, and what might be some of its applications? I remembered what I meant. So this Mishnah is telling us that someone who chovel v'atzmo, if you hurt yourself, you're not allowed to do it, but you don't have to pay. Of course, that what that says is that you're not allowed to hurt yourself.
Right.
So what does that mean? Or what is that? What are the theological foundations of that?
These forbidding of tattoo and of
okay.
It's amazing that...
Oh, but wait a second. You said something very loaded. She said Tzelem Elokim.
Right.
Basically. If this has to do with Tzelem Elokim, then you're referring to Tzelem Elokim as something physical. Which could be, but it's not the common interpretation, right?
I'm sorry.
Right? Right?
And well, tattoos are explicitly.
So
tattoo is explicitly.
Right.
Right. But it could be related to the same principle. Principle being that...
Well, you don't own your own body.
You don't own your own body.
God owns your body.
It's a gift.
Right? That it's a gift.
I think it's also...
You're a custodian of it.
Okay. Okay.
Very nice.
It's a picatone. It's a deposit.
With tattoos, we said that it's very clear. But what about piercings?
Like, it's also forbidden.
Forbidden.
For everybody.
Piercing is forbidden for women?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's forbidden for men at all.
So I'll tell you an interesting story.
Except for slaves.
I heard a story, this goes back at least 30 years ago. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, my teacher, who's now in his 80s, when he was a young man, and he had his first daughter, literally goes back lots of years. I heard it 30 years ago, it must go back 50, 60 years ago, the story. He told his daughter that he doesn't want her to get her ears pierced.
He was right.
And she said, no, I want to get my ears pierced. So Rav Lichtenstein took his daughter, this is Rav Lichtenstein, one of the greatest scholars of the generation, took his daughter to the greatest scholar of the generation, and they went together to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who was the greatest scholar of the 60s, 70s, 80s in Israel, and they together asked the question. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said to Rav Lichtenstein, your daughter is right.
Really? Really?
Now Rav Lichtenstein tells that story about himself. Why is it allowed?
Why?
Because I guess the reason is because the definition of chovel, the definition of hurt yourself, is contextual.
Yes, and a lot of people would say that about him too.
I understand. Let me give you an example. Are you allowed to cut off your leg?
No.
The answer is no, except if
pikuach nefesh.
Except if it's pikuach nefesh. If it's there's a danger to life.
Right.
What if it's not a danger to life? It's just that it will cause that if you didn't cut off the leg, it would cause some other damage.
Yeah, like,
but not danger to life.
Like amputation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the answer is you are allowed to amputate, even if it's not a danger to life. But rather if it's a greater damage that might be caused by not amputating. So this matter of chovel batzmo, of hurting yourself, is relative to the situation. So in a society in which it's common for women to pierce their ears, and it's not considered to be damage, but it's considered to be actually a improvement, the beautification, then it might be allowed. Let me give you another example. What about different types of cosmetic surgery? In which you chovel va'atzmo for a purpose.
Well, like, yeah.
Right? And
well,
actually,
let me ask you something else. Who should pay for it? Because you may have this cosmetic surgery and you may say it's for beautification and then you may say my insurance should cover it. And that makes everybody pay for it.
But isn't that a different question?
Yes, it makes a difference.
I mean, yeah, I guess so, but where does it
unless you say the doctor's insurance should pay for it, because I wanted a nose job and he did damage, so he has to pay. Okay.
But you know the
Skype takes. Sorry, takes up too much battery.
Oh, 9% remaining.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Do you have a charger here?
No, I did not bring my charger.
Uh oh. So I don't know if Jeremy can hear us, but this telephone is about to die, Jeremy. Okay, so anyway, that's the introduction to the Mishnah.
By the way, the acupuncture is still saying.
I can call you if Skype dies. I can call you if
yes,
Skype
you can.
Dies.
Or else Amiram is going to try to connect to you.
Yeah, we'll just go.
What's your? You can call me too, I'm local. I have a local Israeli phone number.
Jeremy Unger in Israel. Jeremy Unger in Israel. Amiram is looking you up.
Okay,
so now after...
Acupuncture is saying that the edges of all connections in the body are at the earlobe. So, and they say that piercing creates a great deal of damage.
Really?
Acupuncture.
Well, I'm happy I don't have my ears pierced.
Neither do I.
I haven't been a long time.
Okay, so anyway, there's so much material I brought here that adds great depth to this Mishnah. And then we have the next one.
Circumcision, that's kind of damaging.
Right.
Oh, that's a very good example.
Good job.
And actually, it's a big discussion in the Gemara how we classify circumcision as a tikkun or as a pagam.
Right. So, what do you think? What is the
What's the conclusion?
In the halachic sugya, I don't remember. As far as in Hasidut, it's both. But anyway.
Isn't there a saying that when Mashiach comes, there's no everybody will be born circumcised?
That's certainly not in classic literature. There's
somebody told me that.
Okay, so now let's look at the Babylonian Talmud tractate Baba Kama, page 91a, and the Dibur Matril, the opening statement that the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah is Hakol Lefi Kvodo. It's all according to his honor. We said that statement was problematic. We don't know exactly how to read it. And the Gemara asks a question. E bayalahu. That phrase e bayalahu means it was asked of them.
Yeah.
I'll wait a few seconds because we're trying to find Jeremy here on the Skype.
Yeah. All right, Jeremy, I'm going to hang up on you and you're going to get a call from someone else.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Okay, and then...
calling Jeremy?
Yeah, Jeremy Unger in Israel, right? Not Turkmenistan.
I'm so glad you're all more modern than I am.
Exactly. Modern Orthodox. Oh, no, okay.
He's not answering.
Ah.
Okay,
okay, so all now right, back in business.
Okay, let's work. Let's work.
Yeah. Okay, so
okay.
They were asked.
Tana kamar lekula kamar ulachumra kamar. That's a question. When we ask the question, we're giving two possibilities of an answer.
Oh.
The Tana kama, did he say what he said lekula, or did he say what he said lechumra? The Tana kama is the first opinion that we have in the Mishnah. You have to pay 100, you have to pay 200, you have to pay 400. And then when it says a kol lefik fodo, is it that the Tana Kama is Lekula? The Tana Kama perhaps said, this is the maximum.
Uh-huh.
It's Kula means lenient. And Akulikfido means, but we might have to pay more in certain cases.
You say maximum, so it cannot be more. Ah, Lekuma.
If the Tana Kama is Lekula,
then it's maximum.
Then that's maximum. No, the opposite. If the Tana Kama is Lekula,
then there's no more punishment.
Then he was... Then a Kula... Let me just say it like this.
Lekula of the shamed or shamey?
If the Tana Kama is Kula, is lenient, then Hakol Lekfik Fodo means there's certain cases which you'll have to pay more. But if we take that, say the Tana Kama is Chumra, that's the most strict opinion, then Hakol Lekfik Fodo is saying in certain cases you can pay
less.
And that's what's not clear. But the Gemara says we can figure it out. We can figure it out. The answer is Lekula Ka'amar. That the Tana Kama with his 200, 300, 400, that was the leniency. And when we say Hakol Lekfik Fodo, that's saying in certain cases you might have to pay more. How do we know that's the case? De'ika ani de'lo bai le'mishkal kulehai. I'm sorry, I was wrong. We're giving an explanation now, not an answer. An explanation. If you say it's the kula, that the Tana Kama, the first opinion, was lenient, then de'ika ani de'lo bai le'mishkal kulehai. That means there is a poor person that doesn't need to take so much. In other words, the Tana Kama said what he said, but there will be aniim that might have to pay even less. Oh, dilma lechumra kama, or perhaps lechumra it was said. Dik ashir debar lemeitav leitfei, that there's a rich person that needs to get more. Tfei means more. Those are the two possibilities. Now let's see what the answer is. The answer is Tashma. Who remembers what Tashma means?
Come in here.
Come in here. Very good. Come in here. Mi de kamar Rabbi Akiva. From that Rabbi Akiva said, quote, Afilu aniim shebi Yisrael ro'im otam kilu hem b'nei choin sheyardu menichseihem. Shem b'nei Avraham Yitzhak v'Yaakov. End quote. Shma mina, we hear from it. Tanakama lekula kamar. Shma mina, indeed we hear. In other words, since Rabbi Akiva was talking about the aniim, and he said that even the aniim get the payment that's been mentioned, then it looks like the Tanakama was talking lekula. Anyone who understands that can explain.
I would love to hear the explanation.
So it looks like this. It looks like we're understanding Rabbi Akiva is arguing with the statement of a kol lefi kvodo.
Oh.
And Rabbi Akiva is saying that everyone gets the money that's already been mentioned.
Yes.
Which means that the statement of a kol lefi kvodo was saying that everyone doesn't get that.
That's what I thought first. So that there are two opinions.
So now let me just make this clear. It looks like the Gemara is making the following assumptions. That when the Mishnah says, this is the rule, it's all according to his honor, mm-hmm. that's a continuation of the Tanna Kamma. Continuation. It's saying that what the Tanna Kamma said of 100 or 200 or 400, that is true, but it's all according to his honor, and certain people can get less.
And certain people will get
less. And then Rabbi Akiva argues, says, no one gets less. So the Tanna Kamma is a lenient opinion that the maximum is 400, but some people can get less. And Rabbi Akiva says, no one can get less. Everyone gets the amount that has been mentioned.
Okay.
That seems to be the way we are reading it now, and that's the...
That's
yeah,
nice.
That's it. Okay, that's good. That was simple. Now I wanted to show everyone the argument between the Rambam and the Rosh. The Rosh is Rabbeinu Asher, who is the father of the author of the code Arba Torim.
Right.
And look what we have here in the Rambam. In the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam in Hilchot Chovel Umazik, the laws of bodily damage and property damage, says the Rambam, Yesh hakaot rabot. There are many strikings. How do you say in English when you strike people, when you hit people? There are many types of bodily damage.
Many ways to skin a cat.
Yes. Sheyesh behem bizui v'tsar ma'at. There are many types of bodily damage that they have in them bizui, disgrace, and some pain, the ain behem nezek, but there's no nezek, there's no permanent damage caused to the person. Ukvar pasku lehem hachamim damim kitzuvim, and already set for them our sages damim kitzuvim, set amounts. Damim means amounts, and kitzuvim means set. V'chol hamakeh havero haka'a mihen. And anyone who strikes his fellow, this type of striking, Mishalem oto hamamon hakatsuv, pays this particular set amount of money. The kulan kanasotein, they're all fines. Voto hamamon hakatsuv, hu demei hatsar v'boshit v'ripui v'hashevet, bein tzurich refuah v'shevet bein lo tzurich kazeh hu mishalem. Translation.
So
these are all fines. By fines, it means that it's not that we're checking each individual case to see how much money was actually lost, how much damage, how much pain. It's just a set fine. And this is the money that covers the pain and the disgrace and the doctor bills, if there are, and the unemployment, whether he needs doctoring or unemployment or not. This is what they pay.
What? These that we've been talking about today?
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, so says the Rambam, even if there is a case in which this person has high doctor bills, the person did damage doesn't have to pay those doctor bills. The rabbi said 400, the rabbi said 200, that's what you get. Nothing more.
What if he just for some reason chooses a very expensive doctor?
That's his problem.
Well, in this case, says the Rambam, it's his problem.
Yeah.
He has to pay.
But, I mean, in the general case where you have to pay for his doctor.
In the general case, the court decides how much has to be paid. How much, I guess the court brings in a doctor.
So the average amount of what it would cost him?
I guess you could call the average.
And then if the person went to a different doctor, it would be his problem. The court sets an amount.
It's like a repair of a car. The insurance tells you how much they give you. And that's up to you.
Okay.
The most expensive to arrive in Dallas or not.
Let's
or
go on.
Go somewhere much less expensive, I guess, and keep the difference.
Right.
Or not.
V'kamahu mishalem.
Then he just lists the things we already read.
Right. We don't
that's
have to read that, I think. No, this is still the Rambam we're doing. Yeah.
But he gives us different amounts here.
Does he?
Than the Mishnah.
No, he doesn't. He says, Mea Sela, a Sela is 4 zuz. So Mea Sela means 400 zuz.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So let's go on out to the tour.
No, but we don't have Hamishim Sela.
Hamishim Sela is 200 zuz.
Ah, right. It's zuz mathematics.
Okay, so let's look at the tour now. We talk about three classic codes of halakha.
Right.
The Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, right? And then the Tor.
And the Reeve. Huh?
And then the Shulchan Aruch.
Right.
Well, okay. I heard that, there was Rambam, Tor, and the Reeve, and the Shulchan Aruch did a majority vote between
that's
the
also true.
Okay.
Once the Shulchan Aruch is written, we consider the three major codes to be the Shulchan Aruch, before that the Tor, before that the Rambam.
What is this Reeve?
You know, the acronym of the Reef is Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alfasi.
Yeah, that's right.
Ah, so that's for the Sephardim or for everybody?
No, he was just pointing out that the Rav Yosef Karo bases a lot of his opinions on the Reef and the Rambam and the Torah.
Oh, gotcha.
He did like a majority vote between the two.
So let's see what he says. He says, Katav HaRambam. And he just quotes the Rambam. We don't have to read the whole quote from the Rambam. The whole quote goes on. The whole page is still the quote from the Rambam that we just read. And goes to the top of the next page until you see the three dots there. And then he quotes Rav Alfas, which is Rav Yitzhak Alfasi, which is the Reef.
Oh, there you go.
The Rav Alfas Katav. By the way, word Alfas is Arabic. Al means the, and Fas is Fez. Alfas means the one from Fez.
Ah, the Fezzi.
From Morocco, yeah.
The Fezzi.
Okay, so the Rav Alfas Katav. She'elu damim ha-kitzuvim einan ela bishvil ha-boshet batzar. Quote, Rav Alfas wrote that these set amounts of money, einan ela, they're nothing but bishvil for ha-boshet batzar. They're only for the disgrace and the pain. She'shne dvarim ha-elu yeshnan barov hezek shadam osela ha-birov. That these two usually occur in the damage that one does to his fellow. There's usually pain and disgrace. Mm-hmm. But there's very often not nezik and not ripui and not shevet, at least in these types that we're talking about. And look what he says now. V'im yesh ripui v'shevet hakol lefi ha'inyan. If there is doctor bills and unemployment, it's all according to the case. In other words, the Rambam said, you never have to pay more than the 200 or 400. But the Reef says no. The 200 or 400 is for the boshet and the tsar. Mm-hmm. But if there is doctor bills, you have to pay more. Akol lefi inyan, it's all according to the case. If there's doctor bills or unemployment, then you would have to pay more.
So he's quoting his father?
I'll read on, and the answer will be, of course, yes. We'll see. Wait a second. I'm in the last two words of the line. Ubeze lo yuchlu hachamim liten kitzva. And in these things, in other words, in doctor bills and in unemployment, the hachamim couldn't make a set amount because each case is different. So this is against the Rambam. Vekach katav avi adoni harosh zal. And so wrote my father, my master, the Rosh. This is the Torah quoting the Reef saying that my father wrote just like this. In other words, the reef and my father wrote that you have to pay extra for the unemployment and the doctor bills.
I'm a little confused. The man who wrote the tour is Abir Shell.
Yes.
Who is also called the reef.
No.
Oh, what is he called?
He's called Rabbeinu Asher Balaturim. Rabbeinu Asher, the author of the Torah.
And the reef is his father?
No.
Oh.
No. He is his father is the Rosh. The reef is a generation earlier.
And what is Rosh? Also Rabbi Asher?
The Rosh is Thank you for correcting me, of course. Okay, Ilana is right. I was confusing her, and she was actually listening to me. Right. Rabbeinu Asher is the Rosh. The author of the Torah is Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Harosh. I'm sorry. Very good. So we have the reef in Fez in the 10th century, I believe. And then we have later the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, and then the next generation is Rabbeinu Yaakov, who wrote the Torah.
And that's about the 11th century?
I don't want to see things I don't know.
So how many centuries are we talking about that they were discussing these Zuzim? I mean,
it's discussed to this very day.
Do they
in this very room.
We are sitting here.
Well, I know, but do they have like a say, well, okay, a Zuzim in today's dollars is X amount?
A chart?
Yeah.
Conversion.
Conversion? Or
there are conversion charts. I'm not conversant with the conversion charts.
Okay.
You can look it up on Google. Okay. Well, you can't because you have no battery left.
That's right.
Yeah. I thought that in the Ketubah, the money that is mentioned is also in Zuzim.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Okay, let's go on. And see what I brought here from the Babylonian Talmud and then from the Rambam. When E. Right? So this is Talmud Bavli, Masechet Bava Kama, Daf Sadi Aleph Amud Bet. And what we have is the following. It begins, of course, with a quote from the Mishnah, Rakak, Vihigia Vo Harok, Vivir Vechule. See the place?
Yeah, I will tell it to me.
Okay, so I will just translate into English. He spit, and the spit reached the person, and then vehivir, and he took off, and the rest of the quote is the other person's garment. So now, what does the Gemara say about this statement from the Mishnah? It says, Amar Rav Papa, said Rav Papa, Lo shanu ela bo, aval bevigdo lo. Translation, said Rav Papa, we didn't learn in the Mishnah except him, but his garment, no. Which means that when the Mishnah said you only have to pay if the spittle reached the other person, it means the other person literally, not his garment, but him, his face, his head.
So it has to like soak through the garment.
Or
an exposed area.
Yeah.
Well, what if it soaks through? What if it's really wet?
That's a very good question. I don't know. But I guess you're right.
A human being have?
I guess you're right.
A lot.
Well, if you tell them something like this.
So the point is that someone spits on you and the spit reaches your garment, the other person does not have to pay. Does not have to pay. Okay?
You have to aim carefully.
And then says the Gemara, V'nahave ki bi'esh bidvarim. But let it be like he disgraced him with words.
That's what we say.
In other words, why do you tell me that if someone spit and the spit will fill in the garment, that he doesn't have to pay? Shouldn't it be like disgracing someone with words? You have to pay there, so why shouldn't you have to pay if you spit on someone's garment? I don't get it, says the Gemara. Answers the Gemara, Amri b'ma'arava mishmei de Rabbi Yossi bar Avin. They say in the West.
In Israel.
Right, and the West is Israel, if we're in Babylon now, in the Babylonian Talmud. They say in Palestine, in the name of Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Zoto Merit, Bisho Bidvarim Patur Miklum.
if you disgraced him with words, you're exempt from all.
So,
in other words, what the Gemara is saying is the parallel between spitting on the garment and speaking against someone orally is a good parallel. And we learn from our Mishnah that you don't have to pay if the spittle reaches the garment. You can learn from there that if you curse someone and it's only words, you don't have to pay.
And we have never talked about this before, right?
We have not. By the way, it doesn't mean you're allowed to curse. It just means if you do, you don't have to pay.
Oh.
It could still be forbidden and a very terrible thing. Despicable and unacceptable.
But if you curse the king...
That's a different... a pasuk mefarash, right?
Yes.
Explicit verse. Right. So now... okay, fine.
So words don't have such a power of penalizing.
Well, again, it doesn't mean it's allowed to do. It doesn't mean it's permitted.
Freedom of speech.
It doesn't mean freedom of speech. It just means that you're not penalized if you hurt someone with words. It doesn't mean that it's allowed to do. It's not freedom of speech.
Why not? What do you mean? It's not the law of freedom of speech?
No, freedom of speech would mean you're allowed to curse. He was saying it's forbidden, it's just not penalized.
But that doesn't really enforce non-doing it.
Well, ancients had a different view of law that
right.
something's forbidden. Today we kind of are like, I won't do it because I don't want to get punished for it.
Yeah. Right.
And you can see this here in the
like daycare. If you ate in Yom Kippur, nobody today will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it says here, Achovel v'atzmo afar pi she'eino rashai patur. You're not allowed to hurt yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in today's society, we're like, why not? I mean, I'm not going to get punished for it. But
it
in that
forbidden?
Society...
Where is it forbidden?
Oh.
You're talking about chovel batzmo or cursing someone? It says,
don't curse the
deaf.
Right. No, in the Torah it says don't curse the Israelite, doesn't it?
I don't remember. I remember don't curse the deaf.
I remember.
And if you can't curse the deaf, it's all the more so you can't curse the... The hearing.
No, but I know how we can deduct it. You cannot curse God, and we are in the image of God.
I'm not sure that that applies.
Wouldn't it work?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're not allowed to erase God's name, but you're allowed to erase Ilana's name.
That's true.
Okay, let's read the Rambam now. The Rambam, I brought the Rambam Hilchot Chovel Umazik, and the same halachot of those who do bodily damage and those who do damage to property. Asur la'adam lachbol bein ba'atzmo bein ba'chaviro. It's forbidden for a person to do bodily damage to himself or to his fellow. V'lo achovel bilvad ela kol hamakeh adam kasher miYisrael. Bein katan, bein gadol, bein ish, bein isha, derech nitzayon.
What is nitzayon?
I'll answer that in a second. Harezo ver below ta'aseh. So actually, when I read this, I asked my wife, what is nitzayon? Never heard that word before. And she said, I don't know.
So y'all looked it up in
so
the dictionary.
So we looked it up in the dictionary.
Uh-huh.
Evan Shushan.
And we both, Evan Shushan, we have the, I think it's 9 volumes, I don't remember, 8 volumes. So it comes from the word... Nates, which means to fight.
No,
the Torah talks about two men who are nitzim, two men who are fighting.
Ah,
right?
Nakon b'Torah. Yeah.
Nitzayon means by way of fighting.
Ah, I see.
I didn't know that. My wife didn't know it. No, we just learned it.
That's amazing.
I didn't know it either.
Okay, so anyway, so what it says is the following, that not only someone who does bodily damage, but rather anyone who strikes another kosher Jew, whether that kosher Jew is a minor or not, whether it's a man or a woman, if it's by way of fighting, if it's out of anger, it's for some purpose, harezo ve'belo taseh, behold, this person transgressed a positive, a negative commandment. You're not allowed to strike any other person. Even if you don't make a wound, cause them damage, don't disgrace them, but you're not allowed to strike another person. And it brings the verse from Sefer Dvarim in chapter 25 that says, Lo yosif lahakoto.
I'll tell you the context. The context there is a Beit Din, a court, that is punishing with lashes a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that you should give that person 40 lashes, not more. So it's forbidden for the court to give more than 49 lashes. By the way, the Hachamim reduced it to 39, just to be certain. So there's a prohibition to give more than 40 lashes. From that you can deduce that someone who's not a criminal, it's forbidden to add any lashes in addition to the zero that you're commanded to give him. If you're not allowed to add an extra lash to a criminal, you're not allowed to add a lash to anyone. I'm not sure it's kal vachomer.
No? I know.
It's not exactly kal vachomer. It's just...
Well, he uses the word kal
vachomer. Oh, he does.
You're right.
He's right. I forgot what the end of the sentence says. Right? Imisira Torah shelolo sif lakota chote kal vachomer lemaket tzadik. If the Torah said you're not allowed to add an extra lash to the sinner, all the more so, you're not allowed to add any lashes, any hitting at all, to someone who's a tzaddik, someone who's not a sinner.
There's a trap here. This Adam Kasher.
Yeah.
Is very dangerous.
I understand.
Because it can create a loophole.
I understand. Very good point. But it's left to the Beit Din to declare someone to be not kosher. But you're right, Ilana. I actually, had I had more time, I would look into that word there, kasher there. I guess what the Rambam simply means is someone who's not the sinner in the Beit Din, who is having these lashes administered to him. Let me just point out one more thing before we go on. I don't know if we're going to go on. I'll ask the people sitting around the table. The laws of abortion are related to what we're talking about here. Because it's very complicated, but to make a long story short, it looks like most of our literature, Jewish literature, Talmudic literature, relates to the fetus before it's born as part of the woman, not as a separate soul. And when we ask the question, are you allowed to have an abortion, at least according to many thinkers, many poskim, many halakhic authorities, it's just like asking, am I allowed to have an amputation? It's the same question.
So it's a question if it improves the woman's life.
And then it's the answer is, well, it depends on the circumstances. It's certainly not murder. It's not taking a life. But it is cutting off the woman's arm. Or allowed to cut off your, as a woman allowed to cut off her own arm, depends what the circumstances are. What is the reason? Just thought I'd point that out in this context.
Yeah, we have people that get chemotherapy. It's kind of damaged.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point, right? Chemotherapy is the same thing. That's so obvious. I never even thought of that. Very good point. Yeah.
It's in a way attacking the body.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now... I have a whole nother Mishnah to do here.
Wow.
But it's getting a bit, the time it is. So the question is, what do you guys want to do? You tell me.
I'd love to stay, but I do have to go to take care of something.
Okay. So we can continue this next Mishnah next time.
Sure.
Okay.
And next time is the last class.
And next time is the last class, which means we will hopefully finish, until the fall, we'll hopefully finish the chapter next time. And then next year we'll do chapter 9 and 10. And hopefully we'll also get next year to the next Masechet, the next tractate, which of course is Baba Metzia. Next time we said it's on Lag BaOmer, which is...
The
18th. We said you're doing it at 1:15, right? You said 1:15?
Uh-huh.
And Ilana will let us stay after she leaves at 3.
Right. And I'll leave you too.
And next year, it'll be in September. Oh, so if anyone knows any dates that next year we shouldn't have our class, I haven't arranged my flights yet. I haven't arranged the dates, so I can take that into consideration.
So next year, though, is a done deal. This is not...
Yes, I got the contributions for the airfare, everything is a done deal. I would like to add more people to our class, of course, if that's possible.